Hold your head as high as you can, high enough to see who you are, little man. Life sometimes is cold and cruel, maybe no one else will tell you, so remember that you are black gold, black gold.
The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Kathy Bostrom from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Oprah Daily. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Daily. The future of menopause care. From hacking hot flashes to postponing menopause altogether, here's what's on the horizon. By Corey Picule. It's an unfortunate and infuriating reality that despite women making up roughly half of the global population, only a small fraction of biomedical research funding goes toward female-specific conditions beyond cancer and fertility issues. One 2025 analysis suggests that less than 1% of pharmaceutical research dollars goes to non-cancer women's health issues. As a result, so many of the health concerns that uniquely affect us remain poorly understood and difficult to treat. When it comes to menopause, the research status quo is finally starting to change, in part because it has become harder to ignore. Kudos to Gen Xers and older millennials who refuse to navigate this transition in silence. None of this is an overnight fix for decades of neglect, but it does change what's possible. More funding means better data, better tools, and more ambitious questions, not just about symptoms, but about long-term health trajectories. So we looked at what's already in development and what may be coming next. Ahead, experts share their predictions on what to expect from menopause care in the coming years. A drug to smooth out perimenopause and delay menopause. 10 years ago, when molecular biologist Puryear Yurtasbaim, PhD, proposed the idea that menopause wasn't a biological necessity and that ovarian function could be extended, people thought she was totally crazy. Today, her biotech company, Cellmatrix Therapeutics, which focuses on ovarian health, has made strides toward turning that idea into a reality, supported in part by millions of dollars in U.S. government funding awarded in 2024. Baim's aha moment came while studying the molecular pathways that are disrupted in ovarian health conditions, such as endometriosis, polycystic ovary syndrome, PCOS, and menopause, pathways that are also affected by diseases like diabetes, heart disease, and autoimmune disorders. She realized that the ovaries aren't just reproductive organs, but a central command center for many other aspects of women's health. For example, she notes, women who undergo early menopause have a 300% increased risk of multiple chronic conditions by the age of 70, including dementia, diabetes, osteoporosis, metabolic issues, and autoimmune conditions. As such, Baim believes that women should have gonads, i.e. ovaries, that function throughout life, just like men's. Currently, Baim is working on a drug that targets anti-mullerian hormone, AMH, a protein produced in your ovaries that controls the growth of egg follicles for ovulation. The drug would slow the release of eggs from the ovaries, putting the brakes on ovarian aging. The idea, Baim says, is that a woman would start taking this drug early in life, come off it when she wanted to have a baby, and then go back on it to have a smooth glide into aging, without the hormonal havoc of perimenopause. If the treatment pans out, full menopause could be delayed for decades, or even become optional. Baim says the team is weeks ahead of schedule on technical development, and their next phase is to test the drug in animals to ensure that it's safe and working as expected. Human trials won't begin for another few years. I think that regulating the ovarian follicle is going to be as fundamental of a breakthrough for women's health as the birth control pill was last century, she says. A hot flash treatment pulled straight from science fiction. It seems almost insulting to ask a woman engulfed in a hot flash to imagine she's standing in the cold. But what if she could step into an immersive experience designed not just to cool the senses, but to teach the brain how to respond differently to hot flashes when they strike? That's the idea behind a program in development by women's health researchers from the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida, and VR experts at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. Their program incorporates cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, into an immersive experience using a virtual reality headset that offers 360-degree views of a snowy landscape and the sound of the winter wind. Through 8 weeks of at-home VR experiences, users learn how to regulate stress responses and bodily sensations associated with hot flashes so it doesn't feel like a five-alarm fire when one happens. The goal is not simply distraction, but helping the brain reinterpret internal signals so hot flashes feel less intense and disruptive, says Stephanie Fabian, MD, the director of the Mayo Clinic's Center for Women's Health, medical director for the Menopause Society, and one of the project leaders. There is strong scientific evidence that CBT is an effective way to deal with hot flashes and night sweats. VR has already shown promise in delivering self-administered CBT for acute and chronic pain, sleep, and mood disorders. The research team will soon conduct a pilot study, says Dr. Fabian. After safety and preliminary efficacy have been established, it will do a randomized controlled trial. The researchers will also test to see if this type of program works with other perimenopause symptoms, including compromised mood, sleep, and sexual function. No hormones, no drugs, just a novel way to help the mind and body work together during menopause. Harnessing AI to predict perimenopause. One of the most frustrating parts of perimenopause is that a woman won't know when it will start, how long it will last, or what specific symptoms she will experience until she's in it. Even then, it can be confusing. Is it the change, or is it stress, illness, infection, an autoimmune disorder, thyroid issues, or even a surprise pregnancy? But experts hope to soon harness the power of technology to predict when perimenopause will strike. Last year, neuroscientist Frida Polly, PhD, launched Female Medicine Through Machine Learning, FMML, a research program that aims to leverage artificial intelligence to rapidly comb through massive data sets of real-world biological data, 50% of which come from women. One use of this tech is to look for patterns that show unexpected signifiers of perimenopause, says David Pepin, PhD, the head of ovarian research at FMML. Since AI makes it easier and faster to analyze large sets of data, you can look at everything, not just hormones or other signs of aging, but all kinds of health indicators you wouldn't necessarily think of, says Pepin, who is also an associate professor of surgery at Harvard Medical School and the associate director of the Pediatric Surgical Research Laboratories at Massachusetts General Hospital. A hypothetical example. We know that the menopause transition is a time when a woman's cardiovascular risk increases, Polly says. Retinal scanning is showing some promise in predicting that kind of risk. In the future, we could incorporate information from a routine retinal scan, along with a myriad of other factors, say, blood cholesterol data, to help a woman understand how menopause is affecting her and what symptoms to expect. Her doctor could use that information to help guide interventions and treatment. This is the power of machine learning, aggregating disparate data into clinically actionable predictions that, in conjunction with doctors' oversight, will revolutionize treatment, says Polly. The therapeutic part of it is farther in the future, Pepin adds, but many clinics are already starting to experiment with AI. He predicts that more healthcare centers will start using algorithms for this purpose within the next 2 years. A more complete understanding of the link between hormone therapy and breast cancer. The infamous Women's Health Initiative study from 2002, which broadly linked hormone therapy to breast cancer, had a chilling effect on the treatment's use. Later studies concluded that these findings were misleading. Research has since added more nuance to the picture, showing that the type and dose of HT, how long it is used, the woman's age at which therapy begins, and breast cancer history play a role in cancer risk. What's more, a major 2024 study published in Breast Cancer Research and Treatment analyzed 10 randomized clinical trials and concluded that using estrogen alone, without progestin, significantly reduces breast cancer incidence. Note, only people who have had their uterus removed can take estrogen-only HT. There is some evidence that estrogen can cause the self-destruction of breast cancer cells, which would contribute to a lower risk of breast cancer, says Joanne Manson, MD, the chief of the Division of Preventative Medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital, and one of the study authors. Meanwhile, a growing body of research suggests that progestins, a synthetic form of progesterone used in birth control pills and some preparations of HT, come with an increased risk of breast cancer, and might be the reason why HT got a bad rap. Add to that the relatively advanced ages of the original WHI sample set. Dr. Manson and her team will continue to analyze the data to pinpoint risk, searching for answers to such questions as, how long is it safe to take estrogen alone? What health characteristics matter? They're also hoping to do a new randomized trial to see how the types of HT more commonly prescribed today, e.g., transdermal estradiol skin patches, micronized progesterone, may affect risks of breast cancer and cardiovascular disease. But that will take many years and research dollars to see results. A study that tracks brain changes across the entire menopause transition. To date, there have been few large, long-term studies that track changes in the female brain as a woman transitions from peri to postmenopause. But we're finally getting some answers, says Pauline Mackey, PhD, director of the Women's Mental Health Research Program at the University of Illinois Chicago College of Medicine. About 8 years ago, researchers started collecting data from the Human Connectome Project, a massive groundbreaking neuroimaging study, and its ongoing extension, the Aging Adult Brain Connectome Project. One study using that data focuses specifically on the brain during menopause. It is following 220 women ages 40 to 59 for up to 10 years. Research will measure participants' brain health across the menopause transition using memory and thinking tests, as well as brain imaging scans, e.g. MRI. They hope to link these changes to menopause symptoms and hormonal changes and assess risk factors for Alzheimer's over time. They'll have more than 150 data points per stage of menopause, which is unprecedentedly comprehensive. We're just beginning to get the data to show over time what changes in the same woman as she transitions through menopause, says Mackey, who is a principal investigator on the project with Susan Bookheimer, PhD, at UCLA's David Geffen School of Medicine. Over the next year or two, Mackey expects to start seeing insights from the data. The ultimate goal? A new understanding of how menopause contributes to sex differences in cognitive aging and Alzheimer's disease, and the identification of possible targets for prevention. Sleep relief, at long last. Experts have recently realized that menopausal sleep disruptions aren't entirely due to hot flashes. Research shows that while hot flashes can disrupt women's sleep, most overnight awake time is due to factors other than flashes, Mackey says. She and her fellow researchers dug into the data on the hot flash drug elinzanetant, which works on two receptors in the brain. They found that its ability to improve sleep wasn't just because it curbed hot flashes, but because the drug also seemed to act on additional neuroendocrine pathways linked to sleep regulation. This is promising news for the many perimenopausal women who aren't necessarily waking up with soaked through pajamas, but are continuously waking up. Well, elinzanetant was FDA approved for moderate to severe menopausal hot flashes in 2025 under the name Linquit. New studies are underway to determine whether the drug might also enhance sleep in women who have minimal hot flashes, but are still struggling to get quality shut-eye. We're excited about the possibility that it would work in this group, but we just need a little more research, Maki says. New sources of funding for women's health research. While older health initiatives designed to better understand women's health netted hundreds of millions of federal funding in the past, new support of that magnitude is unlikely under the current administration. Thankfully, there is still money going toward furthering menopause research. In 2024, the federal ARPA-H Sprint for Women's Health committed over $100 million to projects tackling everything from ovarian aging to brain health and pain measurement. BIME's company was one beneficiary of this program. Private philanthropy is getting into the act, too. Last fall, Melinda French Gates's investment group, Pivotal, partnered with Health Engine nonprofit Welcome Leap on a $100 million initiative to accelerate research in neglected areas such as menopause, cardiovascular disease, and mental health. Over the past year, other donors have given $20 million to the New York Presbyterian Hospital System to seed an integrated perimenopause to menopause program, and $5 million to the Menopause Society for digital education and training for healthcare professionals. Researchers are also being creative in how they structure their projects to get the answers we need to move women's health forward. The landscape is changing in terms of how we do research today versus how we did it 20 or 30 years ago, says Dr. Fabian. We are now moving to different ways to accomplish clinical trials, including more decentralized studies that we can run essentially online, and using big data sets and machine learning to answer questions that in the past would have required clinical trials to answer. A tool to predict women's health risks so she can do something about it. A groundbreaking study published in BMJ Open in 2023 developed a scoring system that can forecast midlife women's future health risks up to a decade in advance, and it may soon come to a doctor's office near you. The SWAN 7 score is the first of its kind to predict the risk of health issues for women in the 55 to 65 age group. The tool addresses women-specific risks in the areas of educational attainment, smoking, body mass index, cardiovascular disease history, osteoarthritis, depressive symptoms, and overall health. In theory, a woman in menopause and her doctor could use this tool to see what her future health risks are and come up with an action plan ASAP. Considering that many healthcare practitioners aren't trained in midlife women's health, this tool could make a big difference in helping women get the preventive care they didn't know they needed. Nanette Santoro, MD, an OBGYN, professor in the Division of Reproductive Sciences at the University of Colorado Anschutz, and chair of the Translation and Dissemination Committee for the SWAN Project, says it's high on her list to get this tool out in public and for it to become a standard part of a midlife woman's annual checkup. That will require additional funding, which she hopes to secure soon. Being aware of areas where there is room for improvement and managing these conditions when a woman is in her 50s is likely to pay off in terms of their future health, Dr. Santoro says. And that was The Future of Menopause Care by Corey Picuel. Next, want the real keys to longevity? Pay attention to these three critical numbers at your next physical by Jesse Van Omberg. There is no silver bullet to ensuring a longer, healthier life, and no single supplement, treatment, or hack. Rather, longevity is a complex interplay between genetics, lifestyle, environment, access to healthcare, and pure luck. But one top longevity doctor says there's a great way to increase your odds of seeing your 100th birthday. Fight back against chronic conditions like type 2 diabetes, heart disease, cancer, and Alzheimer's or other dementias. Preventing chronic disease can extend the number of healthy years people have, says David Dodick, MD, a neurologist and the chief science and medical officer at Atria Health and Research Institute. We're preventing diseases that will kill them sooner. There are lots of daily habits that can help you slash your risk of chronic disease, and we bet you're familiar with the greatest hits. Eating a nutritious diet, exercising regularly, prioritizing sleep, and reducing stress. But Dr. Dodick says that there are three key numbers that can forecast your risk level and signal that it's time to make healthy changes before disaster strikes. And they're found at your annual physical. Intrigued? Dr. Dodick shares the metrics you should pay attention to on your next doctor's visit and why they matter so much for long-term health. Number one, blood pressure. Why it matters. Your blood pressure, the force of your blood pushing against your arteries, is a key sign of your cardiovascular health. High blood pressure, known as hypertension, is a major risk factor for stroke, heart attack, and dementia, says Dr. Dodick. While about half of all American adults have hypertension, not all of them are properly getting treated for it, he adds. Your ideal range. You want your blood pressure consistently below 120 per over 80 mmHg, says Dr. Dodick. And we mean both the top and bottom numbers. Stage 1 hypertension is diagnosed with a blood pressure reading of 130 over 80 mmHg or higher, per the American Heart Association. Number 2, blood sugar, A1C. Why it matters. Type 2 diabetes is an incredibly common chronic disease in the U.S., says Dr. Dodick, and can raise your risk of developing dementia, chronic kidney disease, cardiovascular disease, and other serious health issues. The condition doesn't happen overnight. It manifests slowly in your blood work in the form of ever higher blood glucose, sugar, and hemoglobin A1C scores. The latter denotes the average amount of blood sugar in the previous 3 months and is reported as a percentage. Your ideal range. While a normal A1C is anything under 5.7%, Dr. Dodick says that an optimal score is less than 5.5%. The lower your A1C, the healthier you're going to be, he says. Meanwhile, prediabetes is defined by a score of 5.7 to 6.4%, and diabetes 6.5% or greater. 3. LDL cholesterol. Why it matters. Despite its bad moniker, your body needs moderate amounts of low-density lipoprotein, LDL, cholesterol to move cholesterol and other lipids through your bloodstream to your cells. But too much of it contributes to plaque buildup in your arteries and is one of the main risk factors for cardiovascular disease and dementia, says Dr. Dodick. Your ideal range. Dr. Dodick likes his patients to have an LDL of less than 90 mg per DL, a slightly more aggressive number than the AHA's recommendation of less than 100 mg per DL. Hate your numbers? What to do next? It can be scary when your labs reveal issues, even if they're small. Thankfully, there's a lot you can do now to improve your numbers and curb your risk of serious health issues in the future. Your doctor can offer specific recommendations, but these are a great starting point. Tweak your diet. We've said it once, we'll say it again. Have you considered the Mediterranean diet? It's flexible, delicious, and linked with reduced weight, blood pressure, cholesterol, and diabetes risk. Move daily. Exercise isn't just good for your heart health, it's also critical for reducing diabetes risk and boosting your cognitive health. While 150 minutes a week of moderate intensity activity plus 2 days a week of strength training is the gold standard, even 5-minute exercise snacks can make a difference. Eat more fiber. Fiber, it's not just for gut health. According to the National Lipid Association, eating 5 to 10 grams of soluble fiber a day can help lower total and LDL cholesterol by up to 11 points. If Metamucil makes you sad, add more helpings of foods like berries, apples, and lentils. Find some peace. Easier said than done in 2026, but unmitigated stress wreaks havoc on your blood pressure and glucose levels and is linked to various chronic diseases. Make time every day for meditation, yoga, embroidery, puzzling, or any other mindful activity that helps you recenter. Consider medication. Sometimes all the lifestyle changes in the world can't compensate for your unique genetic wiring. That's where meds enter the picture. Talk to your doctor about your options and when they think a prescription would be necessary. And that's one of the real keys to longevity. Pay attention to these three critical numbers at your next physical by Jesse Van Omberg. And finally, three simple ways to mindfulness without meditating. Can't sit still? These strategies from therapists will help you manage stress and find calm without a single ohm. By Michelle Ross. If you're the kind of person who squirms at the prospect of sitting still, or whose mind wanders more than an off-leash dog, you might assume that mindfulness and the benefit it offers for managing stress, anxiety, and depression is not for you. Think again. Contrary to popular belief, mindfulness doesn't require silence, stillness, or sitting cross-legged on the ground, says Mary Odafe, PhD, a licensed clinical psychologist and clinical and scientific affairs liaison at Modern Health. It's a trainable skill woven into ordinary moments, especially the uncomfortable, rushed, or unglamorous ones. By pausing and paying closer attention to what's happening inside and around you, mindfulness starts to build from one small moment to the next. The benefits, like improved emotional regulation and cognitive flexibility, can add up quickly, says Odafe. Mindfulness expands your ability to release resistance and widens your capacity to handle life's challenges, adds Elizabeth Winkler, a psychotherapist and certified meditation teacher. When you become aware of how the body, mind, and heart get activated, you're no longer unconsciously reacting to the moment. Try these simple ideas to get started. No cushion or singing bowls required. 1. Treat yourself to a mini moment. Even if you have only 1 minute to spare on an overscheduled day, you can practice mindfulness. Odafe suggests pausing in between tasks or activities, say while waiting in line at the grocery store or before booting up your laptop, to focus on a single sensory experience. That could mean listening to your favorite song, looking at a family photo, or savoring the warmth of your cup of coffee. It sounds small, but briefly anchoring your attention in these mini moments can help reset your nervous system and give you a sense of control over day. 2, try a lemonade mantra. Life handing you a lot of lemons these days? Winkler uses lemonade mantras to get through sour moments with self-awareness and compassion. Repeat them while tapping your 4 fingers with your thumbs, she suggests, which can help interrupt stress and ground you back into your body. Her favorites include, I can handle this. This phrase can help you reclaim control when you feel overwhelmed. It brings awareness out of the spinning mind and back into the body, especially the heart, says Winkler. Maybe, or maybe not. If your brain is prone to worst-case scenarios, Winkler says this phrase can help soften rigid thinking to anchor us in the present moment and see more forgiving possibilities. This too shall pass, an instant reminder that nothing is permanent. Saying it during hard moments helps us stay present without collapsing. 3, dip into nature. When was the last time you took a moment to appreciate a sunset? It's not cheesy. It's vital for mental health. Nature offers soft fascination, which is attention without effort, Winkler says. It recalibrates us and heals us. When we pause to notice nature, we reconnect with curiosity, wonder, and awe. So take a break every day, even just for a few minutes, to bask in the sunrise, listen to bird calls out your window, or get lost in the raindrops pitter-pattering on your windowsill. The natural world gives your thinking brain a break and invites you to simply observe. And that's what mindfulness is all about. And that's three simple ways to mindfulness without meditating by Michelle Ross. We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Daily. Please join us next time. I'm Kathy Bostrom, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Oprah Daily is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. But you're golden, baby, you're black.